Good evening. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 569. I will not be doing the entire evening or even a large segment on John DeLorean. He has to be put on the shelf till next week. It's a big story, but the murder of Kevin McCulley is primary in my mind, and also other news events that did take place. We'll get back to DeLorean. The fact that he had Joseph Ball, has Joseph Ball, the Warren Commission, the CIA attorney representing him, gives you some inkling, as I mentioned last week, of the importance of DeLorean. But he'll be around for a long time, like Watergate. His case and his entanglements and businesses will be in the news for years to come, so we can put him on the shelf for another week. I just want to mention in passing or laughing, his wife, the famous model Christina Ferrari, is putting on a fashion show because she's going to keep her commitment November 14th for the American Cancer Society in New Jersey. Her husband would save his $500,000 a year salary, and his running around between his three mansions and all over the world selling $60 million worth of narcotics, heroin, and cocaine in Los Angeles and Hollywood area in exchange for his high style of living and his place in Dublin. She's so altruistic, she wants to keep her commitment. They're very honorable people, you understand. The American Cancer Society is a political ripoff ever since the end of World War II when Elmer Bobst Warner Lambert took it over, also from New Jersey. So she's going to go there for the fashion show. It means nothing, but I think for laughs it's kind of funny. Western Airlines boss Neil Burke is thinking of quitting. That was in the news this week. If you're interested in Neil Burke and Western Airlines and the fellow who was able to get the C-130s over to Libya, which has to do, again, with Edwin Wilson and Kevin McCulley, you can get the broadcast I did last February 7th and 8th. That's broadcast 531 and 532. Very important. It had to do with the air crash of Air Florida outside of Washington, D.C., the sabotage of that plane, the battle between Western Airlines and MGM with Mr. Kerkorian and Neil Burke, the hidden money. The main thing is the hidden money. He went over to Europe, brought back $50 million to buy Wien Air Alaska, W-I-E-N. Those two broadcasts and several more on that tragedy and the sabotage of that plane had to do with the political shenanigans, the hidden money, the overseas money that's invested to buy whole corporations. And now that that money's dried up, when Roberta Calvi was hanging with that off the bridge, the Blackfriars Bridge in London in June, missing June the 10th and found hanging June the 18th, it was a major shift for organizations, individuals, studios. Many people would die. Many people would quit. There'll be exposures. There'll be changes of jobs because the money man tied to the $1.2 billion that the Vatican has in the Panama banks and won't tell where it is, and the 200 million banks that were affected by it are changing many things. The London banks, the British royal family, a lot of people are scrounging around and affected by this. In fact, I believe it affected the life and death of Grace Kelly. So you're going to see major job changes, and I'll be pointing from time to time people that I've referred to in the past who are now making shifts of some kind, and I believe it's related to those broadcasts that I did before. So Neil Burke may quit Western Airlines. He's having trouble accordingly in the money problem, and that $50 million that came from Wien originally, that's in the newspapers this week. Switzerland is extraditing Flavio Carboni, C-A-R-B-O-N-I, F-L-A-V-I-O. Flavio Carboni, he's a contractor who had a big part with Roberta Calvi in Italy with the P2 scandal, the Masonic scandal, the Vatican, the Banco Ambrosiano. He's been in Switzerland. They're now going to extradite him to Italy. The big fish, Licio Gelli, who was arrested in Switzerland, and Grace Kelly had her accident the next day, and the fatal accident and the direct links to Monte Carlo and Licio Gelli's Masonic Lodge, he's still in Switzerland. He has not gone back to Italy yet. He's the big, big fish from the whole era, from Franco to Hitler to Argentine, Juan Perón, you name it. He's still in Switzerland. If you're worrying about the family in Monaco or the grieving, their grieving is officially over. I saw a picture of them at church and said their mourning is over for Grace. Right now they're at the Lyford K Club down in the Bahamas, vacationing on a $2.5 million yacht. They flew into Heathrow Airport in London, and then they went from Nice to London. And Prince Rainier and the three adult children, they're not children anymore, are down in the Bahamas. A listener to World Watcher sent me a picture of Prince Albert in the Vatican with his mother when she filmed the Christmas and the Easter program. And the note on the picture was, will Albert take over from Grace as he becomes the head of Monaco, the secret role or so forth? Yeah, I guess he's down there looking at the vaults and banks. Remember that Paul Marcinkus, the treasurer of the Vatican Bank, the great connector of all these various elements from organized crime into the Vatican, and the subject of that book, The Vatican Connection, Marcinkus is locked up inside the Vatican. He couldn't travel with the Pope to Spain on this trip or anywhere else. He'll be arrested. He's still inside the Vatican, so they took Archbishop Glemp from Poland. They have to have a money bag to get the money into Poland because they're planning a revolution there, so the American troops have a chance to get in and get into Poland and start World War III. Glemp is around there traveling with the Pope. Marcinkus is locked up. He was on the board of the bank in Nassau and had to get off. That's the treasurer and bodyguard for the Pope. And Princess Grace's children are now down, the son and heir to the throne in the Bahamas. And I'm sure that he'll be instructed about where some of the cash is kept. All of these kinds of monarchies have offshore locations for safety in case the throne collapses. The royal family from Monaco is now down there, neck collar and all. They seem to have survived that and are down in a very important place in the Bahamas. There was a story of John DeLorean flew down the Cayman Islands to one of his secret bank accounts, forgot the key, and had to have someone fly down and bring him the key. But these kids are getting the tour, I'm sure. All the major people involved in the scandals in the past years are flying all over the globe, and we don't even have time to tell you why they're there and what they're doing. But from time to time, I will help you with that. Based upon my past research. Very important, the way the Pope went to Spain. He was told, you may not come until the elections are over. They believe that he was trying to throw it into another right-wing government, the first time since the revolution in 1936 when it began, the Spanish Revolution, that the government was able to change hands. And if the Pope isn't killed, maybe the government will stand a chance. But if he is killed there, there will be a coup of the military. This happened in Guatemala last year. There was an election there, and then there was a coup afterwards, and the military took over anyway. The election didn't mean anything, and a man from Ukiah, Jim Jones' acquaintance, a Christian leader trained in America, is now the president of Guatemala, and the bloodbath down there is horrendous. As I say, these people want you back into the Middle Ages, whether it's the Children's Crusade or the Inquisition. And the important thing is to stop them, if you can, at every point where they turn a road and take on a new angle. The Spanish government was able to say to the Pope, you cannot come to our country until after the election. He's very welcome there by the masses, but they didn't want his poster was replacing the candidate's poster. And for the first time since 1936, the government has been able to change hands. John Dean has come out with a new book, and Time Magazine has excerpts, and it was in the news. Alexander Haig was Deep Throat. If you don't have the broadcast that I had, 549 is the number of it, June 14th, 1982, I did an anniversary of Watergate and went into the background of Alex Butterfield in Australia in the Army, and how Alexander Haig called him and said, come on to Washington now and put Butterfield in to tape the president. They planned to kill him down in San Diego. The convention was changed to Miami. Haig orchestrated the whole thing, and along with Henry Kissinger, the two proteges of that very important Nazi Fritz Kramer that I talk about, who's in our Defense Department. And it's very natural that Haig could and would be Deep Throat, because he is a traitor. Henry Kissinger is a traitor. And the sooner we get rid of these rotten people and show them for what they are, the better. Haig's sister was defending him yesterday in the paper. Incidentally, her name is Regina Meredith, and her middle name is Haig, and she's from Princeton and Trenton, New Jersey, Alexander Haig's sister. Haig was on TV making a comment just as he passed, defending himself. He said, I wasn't even in the White House until May of 1963. Well, the charges are meeting somebody in a basement at 2 in the morning. So Haig is a head of NATO and a military. He wasn't a military commander. He was a political appointee to NATO. Could be even a little more logical. I think the answer he could have given to this question of John Dean when he was accused of being Deep Throat was, where were you, John Dean, while I was doing it? because John Dean testified before the Senate Select Committee and was able to get Richard Nixon out of office, which is what they wanted, by exposing the tapes, which is what Alexander Haig was in charge of, and Mr. Butterfield. And so Dean is part of the team who is splintered off to it doesn't matter if he makes a buck if he's telling the truth. And this is the first clink or chink into the armor of Alexander Haig. The sooner they all fall, the better, and I hope that as they fight each other, more comes out. But just mentioning him as Deep Throat did my heart good, because I know he's rotten, and not that Nixon was perfect, but those guys are foul. And the sooner the better, if they are bad, that the people out there more than recognize them for what they are. They've been built up and blown up like huge balloons, and my little needle isn't going to pop, and it's going to take some help from you and a few more people, and there are a lot of good books coming out on this subject. Now, the National Examiner had the story I was talking about that I wrote. It came out 2 weeks after I mentioned it, Why Grace Was Murdered. It was a fairly good article for what they could do. This Cliff Leindecker, we did it on the phone, and he tape recorded it, but the shortest space, but it's a good article. There's my picture of my favorite people, the Auschwitz Pope, Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, the one from Cicero, Illinois, and Roberta Calvi and Grace Kelly. And if you don't have this, because they come out so quickly and they're off the stand, I'll make copies for you. And if you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, has to do that. I have too much mail. Send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. I'll send you a copy of the National Examiner article, Why Princess Grace Was Murdered. Now, Pat Robertson of the 700 Club, and this is very important. He's on TV every week. He's one of these big Christian church people, and I claim that the Vatican money and the money missing out of all of these banks, these hundreds of millions of dollars into the billions and billions, is going to put these world Christian organizations that John Conley and Gerald Ford are part of and Clement Stone, turn the whole world Christian, are going into radio Christian work. Now, Pat Robertson on the 700 Club last week, on the 29th of October, on Friday, I believe, had on his program that the National Examiner, the same paper that this was in, was linked to the occult and the devil. Now, the important thing is that not only was my article in there with the pictures of the Vatican itself and the Pope and the suggestion of murdering of people, which is in the courts and people being charged for murder, many murders who are directly linked to the Vatican, but there also was a story in there on the escape of Hitler to the Antarctica and with a Nazi border, and it's a continuous series. There was one last week, this week, and there'll be one next week on Eva Braun and Hitler. Again, one of my favorite subjects, not done by a psychic. People were concerned when I referred to the Examiner and some of the stories on Hitler's escape, don't associate yourself with a psychic. I said that they put that in to prepare people for what they would do later. You have to understand, read the media as much as I do, to get the code words or the phrasing or the preparation. Those early things were to prepare people for the shock, and then they bring in the hard researchers with the actual facts. And the Hitler escape isn't much different than what I've been saying on the air, if you've been listening to me for the last 5 or 10 years. But if you haven't, it's worth having. And even if you listen, it's worth having. And I'll copy that article and put it on the back of the Princess Grace story. But Pat Robertson was saying on the air that he's going to continuously link the occult and demonism to the National Examiner. Now, there's some papers that compete, the Star and the National Enquirer, and then the Globe and Examiner are owned by the same people. But they singled out the Examiner that is having the stories on the Nazis and on the Vatican. And the reason it's so important is that Pat Robertson worked down in Peru with J. Peter Grace. There's a book on the pirates of Peru, the emptying of the minerals out of Peru, the political life of the Grace family. J. Peter Grace, the head of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, whose allegiance is to the Vatican above the United States, the co-partner with Otto Ambrose for years, long association for, and the Flick organization with Nazi war criminals, but Ambrose, of course, who designed Zyklon B and got the patent for IG Farben, and again, headquarters in New Jersey and in Nazi Germany with over 750 corporations now. He's going to talk and compare the Examiner to demonism and the occult. Well, to smear it doesn't mean much, and to have it on top of the articles of the Vatican and the Nazi Hitler escape is something else. But several years ago, 10 years ago, I wrote, the SLA is the CIA. Why was Patricia Hearst kidnapped? And this article came out in 1974 in The Realist, just before the government hearings on Operation Chaos, and then later they fit exactly. It had a title on the destabilization of the government by the Army, the Navy, and the intelligence systems, the FBI, the local police, on taking over America, creating the illusion of a terrorist organization, and experimenting on various things from kidnapping to mind control. And I had 15 reasons why the SLA was set up by the CIA. And I'm not going to read them all. We don't have time. But reason 13 was to link the demons and the devil to communists, to leftists, to so-called deviants from government lines who don't believe the official government lines, to compare them to the right-thinking Christians, and to use strong-arm tactics to bring in the Christianity. And I gave examples in the article, the SLA is the CIA, of Colston Westbrook, who was trained in the CIA at the Christian University in Tokyo in his mind control programs. Wes Davis, who belonged to the Christian organization World Humanity Against Totalitarianism, not against Argentine totalitarianism, against a Soviet, okay? And then it went into William Buckley telling Randolph Hearst, don't rescue your daughter. She should be sacrificed in the name of Christ. Buckley also, Sovereign Military Order of Malta. And it goes into the Nazi Party in the Bay Area and the cyanide bullets killing Dr. Marcus Foster. His friend Dr. Blackburn had regular bullets. He lived. The black man got cyanide. Cyanide is a Nazi weapon, a signal of world Nazism, and that's why it's so important with the Tylenol case. Now, getting off of the SLA and into the Bay Area, a long-suppressed story, 2 or 3 weeks, suppressed here, and finally broke front page of the Chronicle, national newspaper. People are working on it. There's a murder of Joseph Hoover, 17 years old, working in Oroville, California with Red Warthan, W-A-R-T-H-A-N, Red Warthan, the leader of the Nazi Party in California, who is going to be the national Nazi leader to link up with the international Nazis. He has regular meetings, happy birthday to Hitler, and so forth. And in the article about Warthan and the California Nazis, it refers to Antarctica and Hitler's super race and the Holocaust. They want to eliminate the blacks or separate them. And he again refers to Hitler and the Fuhrer and his close association. Now, one of the fellows who went to the police department, they referred to him as a snitch. He got 8 bullets, .22, in the back of the head, but he was dead 2 weeks. And the black community was objecting to the recruiting and the dialophone of Nazi messages. And the reason it's hushed up is, I believe, not only because it links to the international Nazis, because it'll link to the Tylenol scare and the politicization and the fear of America. The Tylenol scare in Chicago has taken over from what the SLA did out here in 1974 by the same people. Now, Greg, G-R-E-G, Blagg, B-L-A-G-G, a gentleman from Oroville, California, had some poisoning. He survived the poisoning. This happened to be strychnine and not the cyanide, and he survived it. But they were testing him because he had had the extra strength Tylenol when he got sick. This was September the 30th. The Chicago authorities said, well, there's no relationships. 6 people then had died, and they ruled that out. But that was in Oroville. It was written up also in Newsweek, October the 18th, 1982. But the important thing is that the same issue of Newsweek, because that's more available for you than some of the local stories, has also a picture of the student, Mr. Pascual, P-A-S-C-U-A-L, from the University of Pennsylvania, William Pascual, who died last April, and they called it suicide, and they opened up the case again because it was a cyanide death, an apparent suicide. John Judge in Philadelphia investigated the University of Pennsylvania. Mr. Pascual was active in the anti-Marcos campaign in Pennsylvania. He was a student there who is objecting to the Philippines politics, and many people in the United States that you think are apparent heart attacks, apparent suicides, are absolutely being murdered. I've said this for years, and when they exhumed this person, they said there's no link to the Chicago case, but there was a heavy residue of cyanide in his place, and this was an opponent to Marcos. I don't know if you realize the pattern in Germany when so many people died that were opponents to Adolf Hitler. In many towns and in many countries, in Europe before Hitler even marched in France and various countries in Holland, Netherlands, and so forth, were being killed, the opponents to Hitler. Now, these people look like random cases, but I doubt with the Oroville case and with the Pennsylvania case and the politics, it is necessary to go into each case of the cyanide and the deaths and the scare tactics that are going around the country. But the very important politicization of this issue comes on the front page of the New York Times. Investigator Anonymous, Tyrone Clarence Fainer, C-L-A-R-E-N-C-E. I put on the printed sheet here clearance because he's letting everybody off and prolonging this to stretch it out like the SLA for 18 months. F-A-H-N-E-R. Was appointed as the state attorney general, and now he's running for election, and his name was unknown until the Tylenol case came. And the New York Times said, when people asked in Chicago, do you know Mr. Fainer, the Illinois attorney general who's heading the special force investigating the seven deaths, they didn't know him, but his name became a household word. So he didn't have to spend $1 or $2 million to become or run for attorney general of the state of Illinois. He had the Tylenol. He had press conferences. He was in charge of it. It was like Ebel Younger being in charge of the Robert Kennedy investigation in Los Angeles and becoming the attorney general for the state of California. Interestingly enough, this man was appointed to the post by the governor to take over from William Scott, the other attorney general who went to jail in 1980. Scott was charged with, he was married, he had some woman courier, he had Swiss bank accounts, he had money overseas. He just got out of jail last week, incidentally. He's been in jail. But one of the attorneys representing that crook in Illinois was Vincent Bugliosi, the fellow who covered up the entire narcotic CIA government role in the Manson family and creating the Manson family. And so Mr. Fainer, who is running for election tomorrow, we'll see whether he gets it or not in Illinois, became well known. He didn't have to do any more work because he had the great Tylenol case and press coverage every single day. Well, what kind of a job would a crook like that do if he were really letting them off the hook? We swing now to the very important story that was in the Chicago Tribune, and I do think this takes precedence over DeLorean, is the chemical infusion into our bodies, into our minds, the scare of what's going on in this country, particularly since I haven't seen Bayer aspirin be touched yet, and that is the IG Farben Corporation that wants to control the world for that thousand-year Reich. Suspect James Lewis, who uses his other alias when he sends his letters, but everyone knows who he is, Mr. Richardson, he's the fellow from Kansas City who has an overseas business with pharmaceutical concerns, who was accused of severing the legs and limbs of a friend and neighbor and got off that rap, who's wanted on federal charges for state and tax offices. He had real estate offices and fraud. He's wanted on federal charges. He goes to Illinois, and his wife has a new Social Security card, an alias. He has 11 aliases or more. And this fellow is the one who wrote the extortion note wanting $1 million to be put in the Continental Illinois, again, the bank that is funding all these various subjects that I've been talking on the air for the last years, everyone from Michael Sindona to David Kennedy, from the Vatican to the Utah Mormon Church and out to 20th Century Fox and Cardinal Cody with his woman in Chicago. This suspect sent a letter. He said this was no way to treat a person. He says, he never become an informant. Never try to be a good citizen unless you are prepared for the same treatment by the police and the FBI. Now, this Mr. Lewis wanted a travel agency in Chicago to get in trouble because they were involved in illegal money-making schemes. You've heard that one before. He says he worked for the police and FBI. He wrote an article for the Tribune last July, and he had to send in his picture to get his $50, although he was using his famous alias. And he sends in his picture, and then they accuse him, you know, when he sends the note, give me $1 million, the extortion note, under the name of Robert Richardson, the picture was released by the Chicago Tribune. Then the Kansas City people said, oh, he's wanted on federal charges. Here is what I've been saying for a long time. The FBI uses people like Donald DeFries and other agents for counterintelligence, for a role, bring down the system, and we'll nab certain people we want. We'll cause the scare and terror, just as Donald DeFries was used in the SLA story. Mr. Lewis works, according to him, for the FBI and the police. He's written for the Chicago Tribune. His wife worked for that travel agency. He wanted his million into the continental Illinois. And he complained this last week because he says he's an agent. And that is very important because the travel agency is not being investigated by Mr. Fainter. He says that has nothing to do with the case, just as the Philadelphia poisoning has nothing or the Oroville, California has nothing. But they're not going to go into the travel agency that was to get $1 million out of the continental Illinois if it went in there because, as explained, if it went to the Lakeside Travel Agency, which quickly closed the former agency, it could have, by error, cable been sent out of the country and it wouldn't be traceable again. Now, the other person involved besides Mr. Lewis and his wife, this is a team, is that Mr. Arnold, that very interesting Mr. Arnold. They've let him out on just a little bit of $1,000 bail, I read one place, and $6,000 bail on the other because he had illegal firearms. Roger Arnold was arrested for possessing 5 unregulated weapons. Compelling coincidences, Mr. Fainter said in Illinois, make him interesting, but he had nothing to do with the Tylenol. This is what they're saying. There was cyanide in his house. He worked in the company, one of the companies, that the grocery chain that sold 2 of the contaminated bottles. His former wife was hospitalized. She had taken this Tylenol 6 months ago and got deathly ill and just incidentally ended up in a mental hospital. Goodness knows what they're doing or experimenting with her there because maybe she blew the whistle 6 months ago. She was sick from this stuff that her husband had given her. Across the street, he was visiting her at the mental hospital. Across the street was a place where people did, in fact, get some Tylenol lace that was fatal to them. 6 months ago, he was interested in chemistry. Chemicals were delivered to his house. He had given her, as I say, the Tylenol. He worked at the Jewel Food Warehouse, and that was involved in this story, a grocery chain that sold 2 of the contaminated bottles. And when he was picked up on the weapons charge, they went into his house to search it. They did find Tylenol and so forth. He had 2 tickets to Thailand, 2 one-way tickets to Thailand. He not only was going to Thailand and was able, working as a clerk at the grocery store, to go there, but according to the Chicago papers and the San Francisco Examiner, he's been there before. He's been to China. He's been to Hong Kong. And he had 2 airlines. Now, Mr. I'll call him Mr. Manson Family Fainter from Illinois, F-A-H-N-E-R again, who wants to be the Attorney General. We'll have to know until tomorrow if he wins his fame through this terrible thing that's continuing, and he will continue to cover it up. I'll see how far he goes with Mr. Arnold, but they link of a travel agency in one case to the Lewises. They work closely. His wife worked with a travel agency in Chicago. He had an overseas import-export in Kansas. It involved a pharmaceutical concern or concerns. Goodness knows how it might branch out overseas. And here's a guy who travels frequently overseas to countries where, of course, he can do a lot of damage and pick up a lot of chemicals that he needs also that may not be sold in this country, although he did have chemicals delivered to him in this country, including cyanide in his apartment. So he's loose, and Mr. Lewis and his wife are loose, and Mr. Tyrone Fainter is running this, as I say, like Evel Younger did as a district attorney in Los Angeles with the Robert Kennedy case, and stretching it out with the Sirhan lies of the fatal bullet from Sirhan. And then they want to be the attorney general of their states. And this is the politicization of the Tylenol scare. Now, there was an interesting case in the Tylenol story that involves a similarity to all the other major conspiracies, the doubles. And I do want to mention that at O'Hare Airport, according to the Los Angeles Times, a biochemist flying from Chicago to New Orleans was the identical twin for the Lewis family, for Mr. and Mrs. Lewis. They were at O'Hare Airport. The police saw them and recognized them. Allegedly, there was a poster out about the Lewis's people looking for them, and the 2-year-old child of the biochemist said, "Oh, look, there's Mommy and there's Daddy," thinking it was their parents, the identical eyeglasses and the looks. In the Warren Commission hearings, you find an example to furniture store where Lee and Marina Oswald were allegedly there with their 2-year-old daughter and their new baby, born the month before, a Russian-speaking woman. And no way, Marina Oswald was never in that store, and it was a double of the entire family. And later I talked to Marina Oswald, and she told me about a farm in Texas she went to where Marina and Lee and the two children, right down to the accent and everything, were visiting people under the role of Lee and Marina Oswald, and she met them, and there wasn't any such visit of herself and Lee or the baby and the daughter to the family. We'll take a one-minute break now, and then I'll be back on part two of broadcast number 569. They really add up quickly. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.